As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
On today's episode of The Glue Guys, we are going to debut a new segment called Concern Tears.
Yeah, love a new segment.
Welcome back to The Glue Guys. This is Mike here. Say hello, Brian.
Hello.
Check us out on Twitter at BKGlueGuys, NetsDaily.com, The Athletic. Get behind that paywall. Go to TheAthletic.com/GlueGuys, and you will find a special deal. Brian.
The Nets are back.
Mike.
They're so bad.
Are you worried? Mike, you're worried,
aren't
you?
I'm concerned.
You are. You're concerned.
Yeah.
Would you care to, I don't know, rank that concern in some quantifiable way? By any chance?
We're going to have a fun episode today. As fun as you can possibly have about a very disappointing Brooklyn Nets squad led by Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. There has been an emerging sense of anxiety out not only on Brooklyn Nets Twitter, but NBA Twitter writ large concerning the Brooklyn Nets because, you know, they just lost to the Wizards, who the Wizards have been bad previously, and they lost pretty poorly to the Atlanta Hawks on New Year's Day. And so everyone has their pitchforks out on Twitter for this Brooklyn Nets squad. Five games in, but yet they are a complete disaster on the scale of the Hindenburg.
No, wait, aren't they? It's seven games in. Seven games in.
Seven games in, sorry. Yeah,
that's... It's a big difference.
Brian, I wanted to do this. So we are going to debut a very exciting new segment called Concern Tears. Not T-E-A-R-S, T-I-E-R-S, tears,
right.
Levels. But let's start with this. So in Concern Tears, Brian and I will rank various concerns that we may have about different aspects of this Nets team and hopefully come to a decision about what we really should be worried about and what, you know, maybe it's just noise early in this pandemic shortened season. But first, Brian, how concerned just overall are you about your Brooklyn Nets?
So in our biumvirate, I will be occupying the role of the less concerned party, I think. Maybe naturally, maybe not. Maybe it's a character I'm putting on. Maybe you're... you know, Chicken Little act that you're about to put on. Maybe that's a character that you're going to put on. But for the purposes of today, I'm not that worried about it. Although I'll say this, you have the upper hand on me because I haven't watched any Washington Wizards games. So I don't really know how bad they've been, which it sounds like they've been pretty bad.
They've been pretty bad. They've been a pretty big disappointment with Russell Westbrook coming over, but they did beat the Timberwolves earlier, like right before this Nets game. Things have been trending in the right direction. But they started the season 0-4. They had blown a couple of games. Russell Westbrook was just shooting mid-range after mid-range and looking clunky AF. It's a game the Nets should have won, obviously. And so, you know, this is a string of now games that the Nets should have won. And it is a little concerning, Brian. There's no doubt about it. This, to have a lack of concern, I think is improper in this moment. We should be concerned. Concern isn't fear. It isn't fatalistic, but concern is a worry. It's a hopefulness also that maybe things will get fixed, but certainly concerning. I think Nets fans are concerned about what's happening right now.
I mean, based on just like the Wizards game for me was an interesting one just because like I was so constantly triggered the whole time just by virtue of the way the game was called there. And that's I know that that's like not a good argument to fall back on because people think that I guess like shouldn't matter or something. I'm of the mind that if you're getting a million bad calls on you and the other team is the beneficiary of the million bad calls, that it does sway the game a little bit in someone's favor. that's where I come to it. Not to say that it's like, you know, all sins are forgiven, that there isn't room for improvement, obviously. Right. That's obvious. But it was like an anomaly to my eye of like, this is being called two very different ways. And here's the little thing that, and this is way off topic and we're going to get into the real meat of this in a second, but like the way that they do the ref, like running back and forth, I disagree with that premise. It should be that the person who's on the baseline should get all the way to the baseline both times, not calling from half court and then baseline. Because my understanding is this, if you are calling like at the rim fouls one way, you'll call it the other. But if you're calling like traveling, but you know, there's different fouls and violations that happen in different places on the court. That's sort of what I'm trying to say. And I don't want to see you calling a certain set of violations on one end and not have the same opportunity to call those violations at the other end. This is me being, yeah.
You want old chubby refs to be running baseline to baseline.
No,
with
I want
every
the young.
Possession.
I want the young guys to go baseline to baseline, and then have the half court to half court guy be the chubby guy. You know, there's always like one fit dude in his 20s or 30s or something, and then there's like a guy in his 80s or some. So now there's 80-year-olds.
Dick Pavetta.
Yeah. And which is always very interesting. But yeah, that guy can go just literally three point arc.
Brian, that is the physical toll that ref would have. A 48-minute game of running baseline to baseline would be obscene. Like you would only be able to have
an in-shape 30-year-old,
the greatest of marathoners.
an in-shape 30-year-old. First of all, they should all be in-shape 30-year-olds. I hate to say it, right. But there is
are you
like
an in-shape 30-year-old?
I'm an out-of-shape 30-year-old. And yeah. I would not, and I don't, and because of my out of shapeness, I would say I wouldn't make a good ref. I would be able to diagnose that in myself. Anyways, this has gotten off topic, but I think everybody sees my point that if you're, you know, I think it makes sense. If you don't think that makes sense, Mike?
I think what makes more sense, I think it's too physically grueling to have one person run basket to basket for every possession for the totality of 48 minutes.
Fine. Have two very like-minded people at opposite ends, but I don't know. I don't like the way that this whole thing is being done. I don't like it being staggered.
Did you ever play like F-Zero on Nintendo?
Of course.
Or Super NES,
I
think it was.
That.
So my solution involves F-Zero, which is we reconstruct some of those vehicles, the hovercraft. If you didn't play F-Zero, it's like a hovercraft racing game that was dope AF. Again, dope AF makes a return of this in the show. It was an awesome game back in the day. Build some of those hovercrafts. I want the refs not on the court at all. I want them hovering above it.
You know what?
As
was,
if they're
is
like
more efficient
beans.
Than just a hovercraft is just a camera. You can just put cameras there. We've had this technology for a while now. It could just be a camera.
But are hovercrafts cooler than cameras, Brian?
That's
you
a fair
answer
point.
Me that question.
That's a fair point. Anyways, do you agree with the whole premise that led into this nonsense about that the game was being unfairly called at all? Do you, as a Wizards fan, this is going to be tough for you?
You know, it is true that, you know, I don't think I've ever heard this discussion had that a different ref calls it under one basket than the other one. I don't know if the solution is a grueling marathon man like gauntlet to subject fat chubby refs to, but I think my F-Zero solution is more practical. We
you know
can
what?
Enlist Jeff Bezos to get involved.
Not that premise. I'm talking about the premise that the Wizards won that game largely because. Anyways, we can touch on both of these premises because here's another thing. We've got long distance runners, guys who place like, I'm not even talking about top 10. You know, if you're in the marathons and you're placing top 15. Top 25, you're in great shape. You could easily do this. I would rather get those guys running. I mean, they could do it. 100% they could do that. And what are they doing right now? There's no marathons right now.
You could have like a cool runnings, like, you know, sort of environment where like you send big fat John Candy to go find like failed marathon runners. You know, marathon runners because the basis of Cool Runnings is Jamaicans. There's a lot of fast Jamaicans, but there aren't. There's only so many slots on the Jamaican run, track and field team. So right. Take the quickest Jamaicans exactly. From 25 to 30 and turn them into bobsledders. You got yourself a gold medal winning team. My solution is whatever country is the best at marathon running. Maybe Kenya.
Your solution. This is my solution. But your solution.
Yeah, no, but that's what I'm saying. Like, emerging solutions here. Okay. So we have Cool Runnings Part 2. And instead of building a bobsled team, we're building the ultimate referee squad. Okay. And we're finding a bunch of failed marathoners who aren't quite good enough to catch up to the top runners, but have an interest in sports and have an appreciation for the athletics. And it would be the most boring movie ever.
Do you realize how triggered I am hearing you tell my idea back to me as though it's your idea right now? Do you know what that's like for me? Anyways, so that's all. That was our conversation about the Wizards game. That was not very in depth.
Yeah.
But we could go right into like the big macro issues surrounding this team, like an aggregate of all the concerns floating in the ether up to this seventh game, going into the eighth game here, Mike.
Let's take a quick break and we'll be back with our concern tiers.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
So, Brian, this is the debut of our new segment, Concern Tiers. This is where we're going to take various concerns surrounding this Brooklyn Nets team and placing them within tiers. So that's why it's called Concern Tiers. Some of these concerns are small. Some of them are big. Some of them are maybe unfounded. But all of them are ideas and themes and thoughts surrounding this slightly disappointing Brooklyn Nets team. Before we begin, Brian, how do you feel about this segment?
Good. So I just also want to explain that for those who are listening along and not seeing the visual asset here that you and I are enjoying, and ostensibly some people in the future will see on a video app of some kind. This is the deal where it's like the SABC, you're ranking with the S tier. People have seen this. This is a thing that people do on the internet. So that's how we've sort of considered this. We're using the image of players, but there's a little bit more conversation about that. It's not just the player who's at fault, right? We're kind of using the player as a launching point into a conversation about a potential concern and kind of aligning it with one individual figurehead. Mike, that's a little bit of the premise, okay? I just want people to understand we're not saying that this is your fault or your fault. It's a little bit about broader trends, right?
Right. So Torian Prince, if you've seen yourself in the top tier, the S tier, it's not completely your fault. But can I ask, I see the Brooklyn Knight. Is there a reason why the Brooklyn Knight is on the tier rankings?
Yeah, well, you want to start?
Yeah, why is the Brooklyn Knight there?
The first one is the Brooklyn Knight, the curse of the Brooklyn Knight. How much does that factor into just the bad juju surrounding the team generally? Like, from a spiritual perspective, like, where do you rank that?
I put that as a B tier, so this would be the third tier if you're looking at our list. I believe in curses. I don't believe in curses as so much as if they're hexes. A voodoo curse. I believe in curses as systemic issues of culture that last throughout. So the curse of the Bambino was not necessarily that Babe Ruth was smoking a cigar and cursing his former franchise and leading them to a century's worth of losing. The curse of the Bambino is the fact that the Red Sox franchise were cheap. And they were unable to keep the greatest baseball player of all time. They continue to be cheap and poorly run. And it was a curse of sort of a show cause. So this a similar thing with the Nets. When the Nets came into the NBA, they had a choice of having Julius Erving. But they didn't have enough money. So they had to sell Julius Erving, the main draw for the ABA, when they got into the NBA. And that led to a, frankly, long-running irrelevant franchise. If they had, so it's not as if Dr. J cursed the Nets, but the curse of bad ownership of inadequate leadership persisted. So Brooklyn Knight, why does that matter? I don't think it really does, but I think it's like a great, let's let's just put it in the middle tier. It's got to be accounted for because it's a good visual. Been talked about.
It's a good visual. Mike, you go. Where do you want to go next?
Okay, so the first actual concern that involves humans, I guess the Brooklyn Knight is a human, but my first one, and I feel like we can both answer this quickly, how back is Kevin Durant? So let's go over to little Kevin Durant.
One quick thing to note, S tier means it's the most high concern. F tier means it's not a concern, just so that we're on the same page with that. Yeah.
Can you explain to me why number one is S?
You know, there's a whole site called tiermaker.com that I was going to use for this. And then like it made me, the only way you could log in and make something was via Twitter. And I didn't, that scared me. That scared me away.
No,
I
know. Never do
so, because we already get so much junk mail and stuff. So it's, I am responsible for this. I've signed up for too many services in the past and it's bad. It has a whole explanation of why it's S tier. It has to do with video games. And somehow I didn't, it was TLDR, but. I don't know. It's like, imagine what's better than an A is an S. It's special.
Special tier. That's a good way.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. So how back is Kevin Durant? And what we mean by that are, you know, how, what percentage is he? Is he 98%? Is he 99%? Is he 89%? Who knows? To me, just to pay respect, I put him in the D tier, which is the fifth tier, 5 out of 6. I only put him there and not the F tier. And F tier is the very minimum level of concern is just because it's only been 7 games into the season. Durant has been incredible. Here is his stat line so far this year. 28 points per game, 5 assists, 7 rebounds. His shooting percentages, 89% from the free throw line, 54% from 2, 45%, almost 46% from 3, and overall 51% from the field. He is as devastating of an offensive force as he was pre-injury. There's a little tiny lag, maybe more in the ball handling aspect, but actually that's probably more having to do with rust, Chinese rust, than anything else. I put him as a D tier just because we just need more time, but I feel pretty damn good about Kevin Durant.
So I would have gone F, right? So I'll put him right on the line there just to average it out. Just because like with those numbers in mind, like what more can you possibly want? Those are efficient, high volume, deadly numbers that like the fact that they've been there to start with is evidence that like, okay, that it could be that way. Right. I mean, I'm not saying that those are long-term going to be at 45% from the 3-point line it's quite good among his other stats. But it seems to suggest to me that like, okay, you could play at the most elite levels for a small period of time. In theory, you could do that for longer periods of time going forward.
Exactly. So I don't really have that much concern about Kevin Durant. It's kind of amazing that we don't have any concern.
Yeah, it's why I'm kind of generally not super duper concerned. Okay, we'll just put that out there.
And that's an important level. And, you know, each of these concerns are not created equal, right? We'll get to the end of this, but if you are unconcerned about Kevin Durant, that means a lot. That means really good things for the Brooklyn Nets.
Moving along, let's go to another hot topic, Mike.
Yeah, choose the next guy.
I'm going to go with the coaching prowess of your boy, Stephen J. Bartholomew Nash.
Brian's inching him up. As he's speaking, he's inching him up closer to the S and A tiers, indicating that maybe he does not feel so good about Steve Nash. How do you feel about Steve Nash?
So this one's tough for me. I am trending a little bit into like the B tier because...
Which is tier 3, by the way.
This is tier 3, so it's SAB. Maybe even A tier among like the possible concerns here. So here's a little why, I guess. For me, like there isn't a ton I would change about the rotation. And I think he like very correctly put TLC into the starting lineup, which is, you know, I don't know that all coaches make that decision. It's slightly on the ballsy side of things, which I like. So he's got like, I think, well, insofar as I feel like my perspective on things is good, like we see eye to eye on that part of the rotation at least. And like, he's dealing with the DeAndre Jordan politicking situation in a way that is admirable. I feel like he's like sort of tacitly acknowledging the fact that he has to start, but not close. Although Jeff Green has been eking into that closing minutes of the game, which I feel like is an interesting thing it's an interesting thing to test out. I don't know if you watched the end of that Wizards game, but Jeff Green featured prominently there. Which could be questionable. But anyways, small sample size theater. The thing that we were so super duper confident about at game like 3 or two or three or something was our team defense looked kind of good. I mean, it was the defensive rating on like clearing the glass, whatever, said that we were elite, and we like obviously knew we shouldn't read into that and did the thing that you're not supposed to do, which is to say like, yeah, we're pretty good at defense. That's not a statistical anomaly. I am a little bit more concerned about our team defensive issues. I'm a little bit concerned also about we're at a place with this squad where, you know, Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant should feature, I would say, even more prominently in the offense than they do, which is kind of a crazy thing to say just because their output has been so high. That level of efficiency is great, but I could actually weather a little bit more volumetric storm on that front because, like, I remember last game against the Wizards, just watching while Kyrie and Kevin Durant are on the wings, two-man game with Landry Shamet and Jared Allen at the top of the arc. And I was like, this should never be allowed to happen while those two guys are standing there and watching that happen. It, of course, resulted in an immediate turnover. It was a bad idea from the start. And I feel like the next phase of Steve Nash is going to be, you know, we're starting to do the integrating the players things, which you definitely need to do, especially early on in the season. Finding out whose people's roles are, he's experimenting. I'm worried that the experimentation is allowing people to do things outside of their roles a little bit. They're getting a little bit too encouraged to play outside of their roles. Is that fair? Is that crazy?
I think it's fair. I support Steve Nash's allowances to Timothy Luwelo-Cabarrot and Taurean Prince and Landry Shamet and Caris LeVert, frankly. Like, I support that. I understand what you mean, though, where it's like, this team isn't running at its most efficient. And so how I'm going to handle the Steve Nash coaching experience question is, I'm just going to say, if the Nets go on, like, continue to not be all that good early on. I mean, we saw this before with the Heatles, with Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh, and LeBron James. I don't know if the Heatles ever really stuck as the nickname for those Heat teams. People tried to make it stick. It's also kind of like a lame name for a team that was in the 2000s. Like,
yeah, it's a 60s reference.
The Beatles had their time.
Yeah, right.
You know, like, we don't need to always reference them. They were fine, the Beatles. Shots fired at Beatles. But I do think if the Nets go on and continue to be clunky, the person that's going to be pointed towards, the wrath, is going to be at Steve Nash. And he's going to have to be able to handle the wrath in that way, a fury of which he's never seen before in his life, which is Twitter fury. And he is on Twitter, so he'll see the fury. So I know I how concerned am I about his inexperience? I am perhaps a little more bullish on parts of his coaching. Like, as I see it happen, I love how he interacts with the players, and he seems to be concerned about how each player is doing. You know, he isn't like a guy who's like, there's some coaches who only care about the stars, and the role players seem like the coaches barely even talk to them. Nash likes to touch the souls of each player. But I am, he's playing around a lot. And if that playing aroundness, if that playfulness continues, that will be concerning, because eventually we're going to need Steve Nash, the authoritarian, to be like, as much as I like to give everyone minutes, you eight guys are the guys getting minutes and everyone else ain't playing. And part of the authoritarianism is DeAndre, Jared Allen's going to play 32 minutes a game and you're going to play 10 minutes. And that's just what's going to happen. And I don't know if he'll ever get to that point. I don't know if he'll be allowed to, but that is part of it. So I'm giving him, you have Nash in the B tier, which is the third tier. For me, he's fourth tier level of concern. It's slightly toasty. It's like when you put a bagel in the toaster, and it's got just that little bit of brown crispiness at the top, but it's still kind of mushy. That's what I'm going for.
Where do you go with toast and bagels? Are you auto toast the bagel?
Yeah, but that's nothing to do with preference. That's to do with laziness, you know?
Like, you don't go and get the fresh bagel. Because here's my sort of thesis on it is, like, toasting the bagel is fine if it's not a fresh bagel. It brings it back to life a little bit. But if you're going out and making the trek for the fresh bagel, you know, pay a little respect. Give the bagel a chance.
Oh, okay. I thought you meant, like, how much toastiness do I like on the bagel? Yeah, I agree. If it's a fresh bagel, you I think you leave it unadulterated in terms of the temperature that it comes out. You know, you could put the cream cheese, you could put the butter, whatever you want to put on it, but you just leave it pure, fresh out of the oven, like a baby born.
So just from the store. I don't go to the store and say toast it again because, you know, people are always toasting the bagel a second time. I don't do that always. Right. Anyways, neither here nor there. So we're splitting a BC for Steve Nash. I do want to say just one final point on that. Like, I agree with the general sentiment about experimenting with people's minutes. It's this, the making sure that you can be more authoritarian, as you say, about the role within those minutes. That's a little bit where I draw the difference. You know what I'm saying? But anywho.
Right. And he doesn't have to be that hard and fast with it now. It just, it will come to the point where, like, every coach is be like, hey, you're good, you play. Hey, you suck, you don't play. Yeah. Right?
Right.
Or when you play, don't shoot.
Yeah.
We're not there yet with Steve Nash.
Rookie
dookie. Next one.
Yeah, let's do it.
On the list. Let's go Spencer Dinwiddie. You're hovering around Spencer Dinwiddie's head. If you haven't got the update, Spencer Dinwiddie has had successful, all surgeries are successful. He's had successful ACL
that, the surgery. First time you hear that, like, the surgery, guys, we screwed up. That's like a, such a funny thing. Like, you'll never hear that, right? It's always a success.
And it does exist. Like, guys have had bad surgeries, but are successful.
Shout out to my old man, GW, who had a foot surgery like 3 or 4 times to get a piece of shrapnel out of his foot. It wasn't a piece of shrapnel like from anything exciting. It was like a golf piece of a golf club or something got stuck in his foot. Anyways, the podiatrist really screwed it up.
Names, Brian. Put him out there. Put him on blast.
God, I was thinking about it. Tell you, is on thin ice too, Mike. Let me tell you. Anyways.
So Spencer Dinwiddie's had successful surgery. Spencer himself has hinted towards that there's a chance that he could come back this year because he said there's no structural damage to his ACL. There was minimal tearing. It was basically as light of an ACL tear as you could have from his telling of it. Why Spencer Dinwiddie, though, is on the concern tiers is whether the Nets can fill the hole that Spencer has left. To me, I'm putting that S tier. This is all the way tier number one, S tier. And this is why I say it. Obviously, Dinwiddie wasn't playing all that well to begin with. But what he provided the starting lineup was a holeless starting lineup. It was a block of cheddar, the Nets starting lineup. No holes, salty, delicious. This starting lineup without Spencer Dinwiddie, a little bit more Swiss cheese. There's a hole in it, right? And Nash is trying to fill it in with some brie cheese and Timothy Luella Cabarro. And he may decide to go down the route of some, I don't know what kind of cheese Landry Shamet would be, but whatever kind of cheese he would be, that is the kind of cheese that maybe he'll fill the holes of the Swiss cheese that is the Brooklyn Nets starting lineup.
I think about ESPN fantasy basketball, Mike. This is what I think about. Think about it all the time, all the live long day. And in the seasons in which you find success in ESPN fantasy basketball, I have deduced that there is like a trend in a prominent injury to one of your best players early on in the season that they can come back from. This is also not to say that like this is a good thing, whatever. I want to clarify. I have, of course, would prefer this not to happen. But in a world in which this happens, which is, you know, the world we all live in, it's reality, right? People get hurt and they come back and blah, blah, blah. In fantasy, it's helpful because it makes you bring other people. You're constantly now looking on the waiver wire. And in this case now, if you're Steve Nash, you're looking down the bench to see who's next man up, so on and so forth. You're looking for value in places where you wouldn't be motivated to look for value had that injury not happened in the first place. I see the TLC thing as low-key a super long-term value play for us. If Spencer can come back this season or whatever, like no pressure, I have not minded TLC in the starter position because I feel like the Spencer Dinwiddie ball handler facet of his game was getting a little bit overlooked or it was being made a little bit redundant by all the other ball handling and Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, obviously. I didn't know exactly where to put him because I didn't want to take him off the bench, but he kind of made more sense to me as the lead ball handler in the bench unit. So like where Spencer should have fit most perfectly wasn't super duper clear. So anyways, this is all to say that like I think DLC might have been more buried on that bench had we not had this thing happened a little bit. And so, anyways, I'm just looking for a silver lining, maybe, to take it out of the S tier. I agree. It's massive, potentially S tier territory. I don't want to, I'm just doing my, you know, the character that I talked about earlier where I find the silver lining and everything. Sure. So there's a little bit of that, but yeah, it's a massive concern. And I hope that he can come back as soon as possible.
So where do you put Dinwiddie? You tell me where you'd put him.
I mean, honestly, my heart says S tier. My brain says A tier because I can find that silver lining. Okay. I'm going to go A tier.
And again, to me, it's like Dinwiddie was scoring 6 points a game in that starting lineup. So if you can't make up 6 points a game in a starting lineup, then I guess that's indicative of a bigger problem. My thing with Dinwiddie is I had a role envisioned for him, which was that he would eventually flip spots with LeVert. LeVert would move to the starting lineup and Dinwiddie would become the, you know, second unit point guard, dominator, ball dominator guy who Dinwiddie is actually a better fit for running an offense than LeVert is. And LeVert gets more minutes. LeVert still isn't starting. We'll have a question about LeVert coming up a little bit later. I just think like we all kind of slept on the fact that Dinwiddie got hurt and we're all like, oh, well, we have Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. Dinwiddie was the MVP of last year's team. He played the most games. He averaged 20 points per game. He carried the team in stretches when they didn't have LeVert, when they didn't have Kyrie Irving. He was the MVP of the Nets last year, and now he's hurt. He may come back. An update on Spencer Dinwiddie, as we were talking, Stefan Bondi from Daily News had tweeted out that this is what he said. He said, Spencer Dinwiddie underwent ACL reconstruction surgery. Historically, it's possible to return between 6 to 9 months, but more recently, the players are more careful and sit out for a calendar year. And Dinwiddie responded with calendar year question mark and a nah gif. So Dinwiddie is saying definitely not a calendar year. Now, a calendar year would be 2022 if we're really looking at a calendar, right? Because he got the surgery in 2021. That next year would be 2022. That's how numbers work. Obviously, I don't think Dinwiddie's going to wait till 2022. So, you know, Spencer could still come back the beginning of next year, but he has hinted that he would like to come back this season if he's healthy, as would I. And I think it's a big deal. Like he provided so much versatility. He made for a holeless cheddar starting lineup. And right now there's a hole. It's a Swiss cheese hole. And it's something the Nets have to reckon with as we go along this season. So right now, Dinwiddie is our top concern, the lack of a Dinwiddie. He's in between the S and A tiers. Our B tier, which is the third tier, is the Brooklyn Knight curse. Between that, the B and C tier is Steve Nash, and then Kevin Durant is the D, between the D and the F tier. So that's the 5-6 tier, so we're not that concerned with that. Let's take a quick break, and we'll be right back with more concern tiers.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
And we're back. So let's chug through some of the rest of these.
Cool, I was going to say, well, it sounded like you were about to say it, but I wanted to segue very neatly into one that I was thinking about because of the Spencer Dinwiddie concerns. Is that okay?
Yes.
I appreciate that. I know it's your show. this is a bit of an overstep. I appreciate that. Well, because like in my perfect vision of this, maybe not dissimilar to yours, a second unit that's led primarily by Spencer Dinwiddie and secondarily by Caris LeVert is the optimum premium, super depth, everything's working type of team of the future that I would really like to see. The issue there is that Caris LeVert still to this day has not really been able to like for any very significant amount of time have that sort of symbiosis with another guard. It has not happened, Mike. And so I raise the specter of Karis LeVert's compatibility into the arena, the battle arena, Michael. Where does it go for your the incompatibility of Karis LeVert with other guards?
To be honest, LeVert, my concern for LeVert right now, even understanding that he's playing against bench players, meaning like ultimately a guy that talented should be fine. So I should feel a level of comfort in that Karis LeVert's a bench player. I'm at an A. That's second tier with Karis LeVert. The reason why I'm at an A is, again, ultimately the best version of this team, if there's no trades, LeVert should be out there on the floor with Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant. It's simply something that we really haven't seen that much this season. He's still running the second team bench units. He's doing fine, but he isn't doing what I thought he would do, which is, I mean, I literally laid, again, more money on. I made him sixth man of the year because I figured that he would average like 18 and 5 and just look incredible in the second units. And he's been kind of clunky. He's just been as clunky Karis. There's a side effect here, Brian. It's that if the Nets are going to make a trade, Karis LeVert is sort of the center feature of any trade. And if he continues to look clunky, he's averaging 13 points this year, 6 assists, which is nice, and 4 rebounds. But his averages, shooting averages, 37% from the field, 27% from 3, 42% from 2-point range, which is really bad for him. And he's not getting to the line at all. That's bad for the Brooklyn Nets. He needs to be better. And I can't tell him exactly how to be better besides like maybe just be better. But be better, Karis.
For me, Karis, and I feel like we dog on Karis because like he's like one of our better players, and he's just there's just like one little like flip that needs to get flipped for him to just like be the super duper not controversial third star on this team that we would all very much like him to be. We're all rooting for Karis, don't get me wrong, but there are hiccups in his game that are a little bit frustrating, and I think chief among them for me is I think he just needs to make decisions faster. I feel like he always waits a beat too long to do any of the things that he wants to do, and I'm actually kind of surprised about his 6 assists per game because I can't think of like, you know, there's like certain plays that come to mind when I think of Karis LeVert, and it's often the too late dump off or the not enough zip on it trickle out pass to the corners where like the defender can always kind of rotate finally back to the guy for a contested three. Like it's always just a little bit not as tight, as efficient. Like I wish that his dribble drive started in an instant instead of like taking a beat to like be like, is this going to be a pass or is this going to be me starting my like 10 seconds of penetration here? Like those are the types of things that I think. And there are glimpses of times where he does just become of like a swift cutter or a decisive, you know, 3-point stance dude who just, you know, can do those things quickly. And it looks great when it happens and he should do it all the time. And it's just like those bad habits from when we relied on him so heavily as an ISO scorer in a very inefficient manner. The vestiges of that are still haunting his psychology, his basketball psychology, Mike, and we really need to get him into that sort of like train of thought. But I agree with you. I put it at an A, and I think that the other part of it that's compelling is exactly what you were saying, which is that he is the primary trade piece in any package. And as of right now, the compatibility with the second unit is very much up for debate. Shamit and Torian Prince very much require a lead ball handler that can facilitate to make those guys do what they need to do to actually be useful. Like the few moments when Chris Chioza was playing, I feel like it was against Atlanta. I can't remember. But just remembering like how much more dynamic our offense was in the second unit with just subbing out Chris Chioza for as the lead ball handler. It's not damning, but it is like a big data point to be like, yo, like this is a problem for us. We can't have a lead ball handler that's this stagnant.
Yeah, I've been holding in this joke the whole time, but you said 10 seconds of penetration. Sounds like my first time having sex. Anyways.
Worth it.
Sorry.
Worth it.
Yeah, so it, you know, the funny thing is like when we talked about Karis for so many seasons, The way we described him was a wing who had really nice ball handling skills. And what he's become now with the second unit is the point guard. He is the chief ball handler and distributor. When, like, really the best version of Caris LeVert is, even though he's so ISO heavy and the way he's going to get a bucket is his 10 seconds of penetration, is that it is like the best version of him is read and react quickly. And then because he's a good ball handler, be able to use that against threes and fours. By being like the point guard of the bench units, he's the focus point of the whole defense all the time. He's having to do his clunky, you talk about like triple threat position. It's really an unthreatening position because he can't pull up and shoot. It takes him 10 seconds to dribble, as you said. And he's a good passer, but he's not like LaMelo Ball or anything, right? Like, people are obsessing over LaMelo Ball. But I put it, so what did I say? You say A. I think I said A as well. It's concerning. And it's kind of a luxury to have a concern of like, is Caris going to figure out the bench unit? Like, because he's so talented and has shown that he can lead a team to the playoffs, or lead a team in playoff games, that if he's your bench player, it's a luxury. But, you know, it's a concern. It's a concern that he hasn't figured this out better quite yet. So he's an A right now.
Why don't you choose an A? Okay. Well, I'm just going to go with Kyrie just because he's, front and center for me here. I don't have to reach too far. Kyrie Irving, do you have a spiel about your concern?
Yeah, so I think if you're going to label the biggest concern, particularly the one going into the season, was that, like, is he going to be a disruptor, right? The Woj disruptor label, that he was going to go into the locker room and make everyone feel bad about themselves and questioning humanity, and all that stuff. So far, I think it's a D, I think there'll be something that he will say, particularly if the Nets keep losing, where he'll do the thing where he's like naming the guys he likes and naming people that he doesn't like on the team. But I think there's two, like the fact that Kevin Durant seemingly is very close with Kyrie Irving and Steve Nash being the type of person that he is, accepting of all types of viewpoints. I just don't think there's going to be like this, like fissures that just create amongst the team that they're going to be like, oh, Kyrie's just this awful person. I don't see it happening. So I put it as a D. There's something that could happen. I'm just not concerned. I'm really not concerned. I think they know who he is, basically. And that's the advantage that they have.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, remains to be seen about the personality, whatever, blah, blah, blah. As far as on court, what more can you ask for? I mean, yeah, he hasn't hit shots. That'll happen for people at times. In the last couple of games, but like up to this point, he's looked super great. And the big thing with like both Kevin Durant and KD, and this goes into why I'm just generally not that worried about this team at the moment, is like my only true concerns about them 7 games in is that I just feel super scared whenever any amount of contact befalls them in any kind of way. And that's my own thing. I've got to get over it. And like just watching Kevin Durant last night continue to like eat shit on dunk attempts against whoever that was, like Thomas Bryant or whatever. That was indicative that he's moved on. I haven't. It's on me. That's a failure of mine. Kyrie, similarly, he's like, I am unimpinged. I'm pingeless. So don't worry about it. And those for me were like the big concerns. These are Ferraris. I don't want to crash our Ferraris, Mike. And the Ferraris are going well. They're driving themselves. So I agree. I would put it at a D as well.
To transition to someone who used to be a Ferrari, but now is a Ford Pinto, DeAndre Jordan. DeAndre Jordan, I guess the biggest concern is that he's still starting for your Brooklyn Nets. And of course, that impacts Jared Allen in his minutes. Are you truly concerned? And what is your level of concern that DeAndre is starting for this team?
So here's my bit about DeAndre Jordan. It's not that big of a deal because he starts, but he plays backup minutes. So like they're negotiating that well. I think people will recognize, a staunch defender of DeAndre Jordan for his entire tenure here, which is basically just last year. And the reason for that was because like he was a serviceable man-to-man defender and we were playing a lot more man-to-man defense there, and a kind of underrated playmaker for the position. Not so sure about that at the moment anymore, but the defender element, which is really at the crux of our like kind of problem right now, I point to him as being like, this is a big part of the failure of the defense when he's on the court, because our defense is so switch heavy. It's so switch heavy. So communication. Do you hear my cats going? Oh, jeez. Yeah. The fucking cats. It's always the witching hour right here. It's so much about communication and just general court awareness. And he has tunnel vision on defense in a way that is alarming. It is problematic and it is obvious. And he gets beat. Like, it's not that he gets beat. He just doesn't see the guy with the ball oftentimes, who's like just kind of like waltzing into the lane while he's not paying attention. While he's just laser focused on the guy he's guarding. Those are things that need to change if we're going to be like really relying heavily on this intricate, what's a really complicated defense. I mean, that's what we have. We're trying to implement a fairly complicated defense. And he is not a dude who seems to be able to adapt to that kind of complicated defense a few games in.
Yeah. A switching defense, the hardest position on the floor as a defender is the center. I mean, they're typically all the slowest players on the floor typically. And they have trouble guarding guards, and everyone's switching. I mean, you think about, so the Milwaukee Bucks always get crap because they don't switch on defense in it. And they have Brooke Lopez kind of just sitting by the basket waiting. And they typically have one of the best defenses in the NBA, but it doesn't transition well to the playoffs. The switching defense, which goes back to maybe Steve Nash, it is hard early in the season to look perfect on a switching defense. I mean, we saw in this Wizards game, Kevin Durant yelling at Joe Harris, telling him, I don't need help. You know, mm-hmm. I don't need your help in the moment. The Nets are doing this hyper ultra level of switching defense. We're like, it's even more than like, if I'm going to be run into a screen, the guy on the other side of the screen, the other defender picks up the ball. It's more of like, frankly, and Joe Tsai is going to love this, it's more of a lacrosse level defense,
wow,
which is just, wow, like everyone's in motion. If the guy who has the ball goes to the right, like someone shooting out from the lane, a defender to go at him to kind of like disrupt the system. And early in the season, this is only 7 games in, the Nets had the best offense in the NBA. Now it doesn't look that great, or best defense, excuse me. Now that defense doesn't look all that great. I just think it's hard. Like, so defense is hard. So back to DeAndre Jordan, this is the worst type of defense for him. And he just isn't that guy anymore. It's better for Jared Allen, and Jared Allen is better at it. I think if my concern is that DeAndre Jordan is starting, I'm not concerned, because what I'm seeing, Brian, Kevin Durant seems to like is falling in love with DeAndre Jordan, or with Jared Allen.
Mm-hmm.
Like the first Hawks game, he was like staring down Jared Allen in like a loving way, like an aggressive, loving way, being like, you're the fucking man. Okay. Yeah. And the more Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant recognize the talents of Jared Allen, the easier it will be eventually for Steve Nash to move DeAndre Jordan into a subjugated role.
Can I say something?
Yes.
On our Discord, which if you click on Twitter in our bio is the invite link to the Glue Guys Discord, a prominent poster on there, Jeff, suggested the following take, which I'm going to steal here, which is that it could be that Nash is playing DeAndre Jordan with Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant so much so that they can get triggered at him and ask him to be swapped out for Jared Allen among the starters, which is... I said I was going to steal the take, and I did. So there it is. But shout out to the Discord. They're active on the games, so if you guys want to pop in, hit that invite. Little plug for the Discord, Mike. You don't hear that very often.
All right. So, and one of the concerns I had was like overall team defense, by the way. So I think we kind of are addressing that.
That's what this is.
Do we have a Oh, it's the shield.
It's the shield. That's the shield. But wait, we have to give DeAndre. I mean, if you want to do that with the shield, if you want to combine that.
I'm going to put him at a C, which is the fourth tier down, because I'm not concerned about him starting, because I think Steve Nash is handling the center minutes okay, even though DeAndre finished that one game, I think, against the Hawks. But I think he's finishing it okay, and I think there'll be resolution. The team defense thing, gosh, I'll put between a B and a C, between the third and fourth tier. Because I think ultimately the Nets will get to a really good place, particularly if they do move Karis to the starting lineup eventually. and he fits better with that guy with the team. Like, they should be better at defense, but 3-4 tier. Where are you with defense?
Yeah, I am actually pretty optimistic about the defense. I would go a little bit further down into the CD realm, just because of this, because I think we have a really high basketball IQ squad here that's implementing a pretty tricky defense, but one that I generally agree with. So like the long-term payoff in that is, I think, really high. Early on, you sustain a lot of hits with trying to do something complicated. So for me, like, I on paper agree with everything. Obviously, like, living out the implementation of it is it's a little bit hard to bear, but you know, you do it for the promise of future fruit. Like, that's what you do. So I put it more in the, I'm going to go between C and D, even maybe D. So average dad, we'll put it at a C.
Okay. We have a few more left. We'll do them kind of quickly. I'll say the rest of them together.
Yeah. Great.
And then we'll kind of put it all out there. So we have Landry Shamet. Landry Shamet, like, hasn't been that good. What was our Torian Prince? Just like,
we didn't have him. I think a part of the guys, team. We just kind of like threw him on there because, like, maybe we'll have something for them. Mostly we kind of already talked about it, but like the Spencer Dinwiddie TLC thing is kind of the same like concept basically for me. Right. So I love TLC
and he's been playing like fine in the starter spot. I just think it is like, ultimately when you get to like the playoffs, if Timothy Luwela-Cabarrot is like the starter, it means either he's played really well or the Nets have a big problem. So I'll put that level of concern. How concerned are you about Landry Shamet?
I think I need more data on Landry. I think of anyone, I have like the least clear view of him as like what the best version of him could be. He is a lot smaller and faster than I assumed previously. I thought he was kind of like a, you know, like one of the, like a, what's his name? Like Kyle Anderson sort of style player or something like that. But he's really not. He's like a kind of a fast, like, you know, roving guard archetype. So I kind of had a total misconception about what exactly he does. And so obviously he hasn't shot super well early on. He's made some shots and his like mechanics look great. Like there's obviously like passes the eye test as the potential for like a good role player. Just hasn't really clicked fully yet. So jury's still kind of out for me on Landry Shamet. But I wouldn't say that the concern is overall very high because the position's not one that is super duper important, I guess, to me in my mind. So I put him in sort of like the CD area, I guess.
Yeah, I'll stick him CD too. So that's tier 4 or 5. And I agree with you. It's like, I think what I visually see from him, I like. What he produces, he hasn't done anything this year. He's averaging 4 points per game. He's shooting, let me pull up his 3-point stats, 22% from three on 3 attempts a game. I mean, like he's getting some shots off. It's not like it's an insignificant number. But I like what I see out of him. I think that like once he starts hitting his shot, he'll immediately like shoot up the rankings of guys we love because he's doing everything else that to me is interesting. But it's, you know, it's a little concerning because they could have had Luke Kennard ostensibly, or they could have had Sadiq Bey, who's playing pretty well for the Pistons, and they chose Landry Shamet. So it's a little concerning. I like between C and D for Landry Shamet. So we'll do. We had Joe Harris on here. No, how could you be concerned about Joe Harris? Right?
No
concern. No, right? He's shooting 51% from three. He's the greatest human on the face of the earth. Torian Prince. Level of concern that he exists on this team. Where are you with him?
So the last couple of games, he looked a lot better. So I, this is always what happens with Torian though. This is the meme right here. Two games on, 8 games off. And I'm not falling for it this time. You're S tier. No. Gosh, what to do with Torian? Cause like the thing is like, it would be great to have that position filled with a super reliable player of that type, the like dogged 3-and-D sort of reach for a stretch four kind of wing. Those are covetable players. He wants to be one of those covetable players. He is still currently not really one of them. Just because like, he doesn't do quite enough of the utility things to make it super duper click, and the shot obviously comes in and out. So with that in mind, him still getting a lot of minutes. I don't know. What do you think? I'll ramble on and convince myself of anything about Taurean.
No, I mean, we've talked about this so many times. It's like Taurean, as you said, he'll have like two good games and then like just a bunch of other ones where like you just feel like he's putting up shots that don't matter and don't go in. But he is now because he hit like two or three extra threes so far, he's hitting now 39% from three on 2.5 three-point attempts per game. So those are good numbers. But like that's just because he hit like two extra ones because it's so early in the year. I mean, level of concern. How could we be concerned about Taurean Prince, you know, particularly because he isn't even starting when the Dinwiddie hole was left open? So let's just be fair. I'll put him in the D tier just for now. I mean, he was so horrible early in the year. He's playing better. He doesn't continually deserve our scorn.
It's easy for him to get that high in there.
So to wrap up, I mean, we have, and I think this is, you put it in a good perspective earlier. So the biggest concern right now, the S tier between S and A, is Dinwiddie, the hole left by Dinwiddie. Next one is Caris LeVert, which is the A tier, the second tier. That, like, how Caris is fitting on the team, how he's playing, that's a concern. But then you go down, it's like, if you're talking about your Ferraris, Kyrie's personality issues, quote, is a D tier, second to the bottom. And Durant, is he back, is between not caring at all to slightly caring, right? So if the two biggest issues going on with this team were that, you know, and everyone feels great about them, I think this team is in a good place. If I'm reviewing us, if I'm taking an unbiased look, I think we probably should bump up the defense higher just because of how these past few games have gone. We have it currently as a C tier, which is fourth tier. We probably should have it in the third tier. Because ultimately,
it's double S.
You moved up to the S. It's the top concern. Because ultimately, if this team can't play defense, it's going to kill the team. So I think it deserves to be a higher level.
Well, we did it, Mike.
This was great. I'm going to take a quick screenshot of, I'm not going to do the old guy thing where like I take a picture from my cell phone of the screen and be like, this is what was on my screen, but this is on our screen. So I just took a shot of it. I'm sure Brian can send it to me. This is so much fun.
Really good.
Thank you all for listening. I promise. I mean, we're just not that concerned, but there's concern is necessary right now. The Nets would be in the playoffs if the playoffs started today.
Well, when you put it like that, Mike, geez.
Thank you all for listening. We'll be back in your ears as soon as possible.